No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome back to Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is your host, Jess Root, and we are back after a little bit of a layoff after we've hit the free agency period. We previewed free agency a few weeks ago. We talked about the free agent moves the Arizona Cardinals have made, and things have died down a bit. But now we are now, as it is Tuesday evening. If you're listening to us live, it is Tuesday evening, March 31st, and we are less than 1 month away from the NFL draft, the 2015 NFL draft. And guess what? We are officially at Seth Cox wheelhouse right here. And we're going to be talking Arizona Cardinals NFL draft talk. We're talking NFL draft tonight on Revenge of the Birds Radio. And if you would like to call in, we're going to be talking about the offense. We're going to be talking about the offensive side of the ball. We've got kind of a plan as we lead up to the NFL draft over the next several weeks. We're going to have two more shows before the draft. We'll have a show after the draft, and that's how it goes. And if you want to join us in the conversation tonight, you can call in at 646-478-3787. Again, that's 646-478-3787, Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. And before we get started, we'll go ahead and kick things off with the Cardinals headlines. What's been going on with the Arizona Cardinals? We actually had a couple of things in the news today, Tuesday. Now, if you're listening to the show live, thank you for listening. We appreciate it, as always, taking the time to make Revenge of the Birds Radio part of your sports listening, your Arizona Cardinals routine, and however you're doing that. And if you're listening to this after the fact via download, again, I also appreciate it. You can subscribe via Stitcher Radio, you can by iTunes, and simply you could just follow on Blog Talk Radio on Revenge of the Birds Radio. So let's go start with the headlines before we bring Seth on the line, and then we'll go ahead and get started. Today, Tuesday, there were a couple of things that came out. The Cardinals added a quarterback to their offseason roster. That gives them four quarterbacks. It's Chandler Harnisch. He's their camp arm. He's the fourth quarterback on the roster. He was on the Colts when Bruce Arians was there, and he was probably made his biggest. The biggest thing he's known for was being Mr. Relevant, the last guy drafted in the Andrew Luck draft. He bounced between the active roster and the practice squad at Indy. He spent the time on the practice squad in Minnesota, and now he will join the offseason roster of the Arizona Cardinals behind Carson Palmer, Drew Stanton, and Logan Thomas. Don't read into this move at all. He's only there because the Cardinals pretty much always have, as far as I can recall, the past few years, they've always gone into the offseason, or at least entered offseason workouts with four quarterbacks. Nothing's happening there. Other thing. Darren Urban tweeted via the NFL Players Association, the NFL Players website, that keeps track of the salary cap situation for each team. The Cardinals suddenly came up with $4 million more of cap space, going from $9.9 million to $13.9 million under the salary cap with their top 51 contracts on their roster, leading speculation that there was a contract restructure. I speculated today on Twitter, I'll write about it in the morning, what that probably means is Calais Campbell, I would speculate, had his contract restructured. He was due $9 million this year. I would, if I had to guess, just by the fact that it was an even $4 million that was added in cap space, that the Cardinals turned $8 million of that $9 million into a restructure bonus paid to Campbell now. And he will make $1 million in salary for the 2015 season. What that $8 million bonus would do would prorate his cap hit over the next two seasons, 2015 and 2016, when his contract is up. And so that would reduce this year's salary cap hit by exactly $4 million and then add another $4 million to 2016. So Cardinals now have $13.9 million in salary cap space. What that means exactly, we don't know. Is that a precursor to a trade for Adrian Peterson? I don't know. Probably just means that they wanted to give themselves a little more wiggle room for any particular reason. So yeah, basically it. The Cardinals really haven't done a whole lot. They did have the NFL Veteran Combine held at the Cardinals training facility in Tempe a couple of weekends ago. And the result was they picked up a couple of players. They signed Nate Slaughter, fast wide receiver. We'll see if he does anything. And they picked up a tall tight end. He was a receiver before. Ofine Moma, something like that. I'll have to check the pronunciation. But those are your Arizona Cardinals headlines. And it's time to bring on. I'm seeing a different phone number. I'm thinking it's Seth. So let's go ahead and bring him on. I'm going to assume that it is. Is this Seth?
Can you hear me, Jeff?
I can hear you. Did you try the Google Hangout connection? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying that. So hopefully people can hear me better.
I can tell volume-wise it's much more even because I tend to be on a little bit loud, I guess. And then the cell connection, while it was reliable, it wasn't as loud as me. So welcome to the show, Seth. Guess what? This is the time. You've got to love this time of year, don't you?
Oh, yeah. This is my favorite time of year. It's been a good time over on my podcast on Draft Savages as we've started to break down the team by team stuff, and we've gone through all the positional stuff. So it's been busy, but it's a lot of fun, and it's just going to get more enjoyable as we get closer to the draft.
And we'll go ahead and plug your draft podcast, the Draft Savages podcast. Just do that for everyone because it's a great listen. And not only that, you can get draft information that is, well, at least for me, you're not going to get any sort of draft breakdown nearly as good as what Seth's going to do with his group. Go ahead and plug that for everyone. How can they listen to it? Where can they find it?
We're on footballsavages.com. That's our host site. You can find us. You can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher Radio under Draft Savages. We're doing a lot of, like I said, teams now. So we're going through each division right now. So, but I as I start posting my kind of boards on Revenge of the Birds, like I did with the Edge players, I'm going to start linking the podcast that we have done previously with those positional breakdowns. And so you can have a listen to why and how I came to some of those conclusions and what some of our guests have said. We've had a lot of great guests from around the internet and football world. So it's a lot of fun, and it's just something we try to do once a week and get together and talk a little bit about the NFL draft. So, you know, it's kind of what I enjoy doing. So,
and this is one of the big reasons in this show, because your draft analysis far outweighs anything I could possibly give. And I'll be perfectly honest. If we're talking local type radio, I'm the Burns, you're the Gamble in terms of the amount of tape you watch and looking at players. And I kind of follow, I see some college football. I follow the scouting reports of guys I respect. And then from there, use that as a basis for draft talk. I'm not a scout. I can tell you players I like. Players, I think, who have the tools. Seth's the go-to guy. Seth knows much more about what he's doing. So listen to him, as tonight we're going to be talking offensive side of the ball when it comes to the Arizona Cardinals as they lead up to the NFL drafts. So kind of have what we have on tap for the next show is we're going to talk about, well, who are the biggest impact players we can find on offense in the draft, whether that's at the top of the draft or what are teams that perhaps teams might be able to find throughout the middle rounds. And then we're going to talk about the positions. We're going to talk about the quarterback position. We're going to talk about running back, which, by the way, running back has kind of been a fun position this offseason. We're going to talk wide receiver a little bit. But basically, who fits? Who fits? Will the Cardinals draft at that particular position? Because with 8 draft picks, you can't pick every position. We're going to look at the offensive line. Despite the additions they made, might they look to add another piece? And then we'll close with tight end, and then we'll give you kind of a preview as to what we're going to be doing in 2 weeks when we return with Revenge of the Birds Radio, talking NFL draft about Arizona Cardinals on defense. So you ready to go ahead and get started, Seth?
Yep, let's go ahead.
All right, so who are the biggest impact players at the top of the draft? Obviously, we've got the big names. You've got Jameis Winston, you got Marcus Mariota, then you've got receivers like Amari Cooper, Jalen Strong, local guy, Arizona State comes up. If you're looking at the first couple of rounds, or even if going to the – who are going to be the players that are expected to make the biggest impact in terms of the offense?
I think the first person obviously is going to be Jameis. That's just going to be the guy that everybody kind of gravitates towards. A lot of people like Marcus Mariota as well. And, you know, he's going to be more of a, I don't want to say scheme dependent, because everybody's a little scheme dependent, but he's going to be more of a niche fit guy. I don't see the Titans being interested in Mariota. Same way I kind of don't see like the Cardinals being interested in Mariota. I think the Cardinals would be, you know, hypothetically interested in Winston if they had the ability to draft him. Mariota's big and, you know, has the arm, but I don't know if he's a fit in what Arians likes to do. So I think that's going to be a big thing. Obviously, we're going to hear a ton about, you know, Mariota in the Eagles and stuff like that. A guy that's severely underrated in terms of ability or impact, and, you know, one of my kind of things that I've always harped on is guard play. And I think Brandon Scherff out of Iowa, I'm not a huge fan of him at tackle, but I think he can come in and play guard and be really good, like kind of like Joel Bitonio or Zach Martin were last year at the guard position. And then the wide receivers, you hit on Amari Cooper, and then I think Kevin White's the other one. Those are the big guys right at the top. Obviously, running back is a little bit of a different animal right now. You have Todd Gurley. The main thing with Gurley is how healthy is he going to be? You have to be very certain that he's going to be healthy in year one before you make it, you know, pull that trigger, so to speak, on that. Unless you're a team like, say, Baltimore at the end of the first round, who has Justin Forsett kind of already entrenched and can make a move from there. Obviously, Melvin Gordon is probably the biggest, the prospect that's going to divide the most people at the top, just because a lot of people are going to say, oh, he's a product of the Wisconsin offense. And other people are going to say, oh, he's the next Jamaal Charles. I don't think he's Jamaal Charles. I think that's kind of been dispelled through his workouts. I do think he can be like Matt Forte. And, you know, if you use that, and Matt Forte is a really good running back. So I think that could be a guy that, you know, is a game changer at the next level. And then obviously, along the offensive line, it's an interesting year because you don't have maybe the clear-cut top guy at the top. But for my money, you have a lot of talented guys. It's kind of nice for the Cardinals not to have to be looking at every tackle prospect for once, something we haven't seen in a long time when it comes to the Cardinals and the draft is, you know, they're not in need of a tackle because they're kind of entrenched with Jared Valdir and Bobby Massey right now. But they'll always be in play, tackles. And I think a guy like Lyle Collins, a guy like DJ Humphreys of Florida and Jake Fisher of Oregon are all kind of guys that are being pumped up. So, I mean, at the top of the draft on the offensive side of the ball, you have a lot of names that can come in and make an impact on day one. I'm interested to see kind of how this falls. Obviously, where they land is really important, but I'm also interested to see how these teams fall and where they end up, because I think that can really dictate not their success necessarily, but the amount of impact they have in year one.
Then that's going to be kind of the question. Who's going to be the most impactful in year one? Who will be the most impactful long term? Do you buy into the knucklehead reputation Jameis Winston has? How much is of a concern if you're an NFL team, if you're Tampa Bay or even Tennessee, those teams at the top, how concerned are you about some of the knucklehead things that he has done? Not only, you know, some of the dumb things, but then the alleged sexual assault. How much do you worry about? Obviously, the on-field play, when you look at the type of player that he is on the field, I've heard even comparisons. If he weren't black, the type of player that some guys have compared, yes, Big Ben. So Ben Roethlisberger is an apt comparison. But some have even gone, because of his football acumen, the football IQ, the smarts that he has on the field, and the kind of he can wow you in the classroom, is Peyton Manning. But then you have this off the field stuff. How concerning does that would that be to you? Say you're looking at him as a team.
I think one of the things that you and I have talked about in text before is I was lucky enough to pick the brain for a couple months of a football executive who his son just happened to play soccer against my son. So I got to see him at practice every Tuesday. And I asked him about that. And I said, you know, do the things about off the field with Jameis worry you? And he said, you know, from just the stuff that he can tell me, he said they're comfortable with what they've heard. They said a lot of it is a kid, you know, a kid being dumb and being a kid. Obviously, for all of us, the whole rape allegation is way more than a kid being a kid. But, you know, if these teams, they have way more information than we would well, not just that, but even fathom. I mean, they have information, you know, on these guys going back to junior high and like things that they did in class and stuff like that. Like it's kind of ridiculous in a sense, but they do that for the reason you just said. Can they make the pick of Jameis Winston at number one or two, or, you know, in the first round?
And then turn him into the face of the franchise.
Yeah, exactly. And
you're going to put that face on the, you say, Tampa Bay, you're the Jameis team, and that's how we're going to identify ourselves. You don't want that to crash and burn.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, hearing that, yes, they're comfortable. I think that from a fan perspective, you have to take that with, okay, then, you know, the NFL's comfortable with what they found. They're comfortable with the information they were given, because in reality, you know, none of us are ever going to have that information that the NFL is going to get. And so we just have to kind of do kind of like what we did with Ben Roethlisberger. Okay, is he probably kind of a scumbag of a person? Probably, but is it about growing up and finding a organization that's willing to kind of put their arms around them and say, okay, let's not do this anymore. Let's not do that anymore. Let's take ourselves out of these positions and put ourselves in these positions. And I think from, you know, what I've heard from other, you know, draft guys, and then, and, you know, that just these brief talks that I was fortunate enough to have, that it sounds like yes. And the fact that nobody is saying that, you know, Tampa Bay is going anywhere but Jameis, I think that kind of speaks volumes too. So I think you have to go with the information that you have, but without a doubt, I mean, the off field stuff has to worry you. But I think at the same time, the on the field stuff, and, you know, maybe he is more Eli than Peyton as a player, that also has to worry you too, because as great as Eli was for what, two Super Bowl runs. There's been a lot of, you know, not great in between there. And obviously, as Cardinals fans, we'd take two Super Bowl runs in a heartbeat. But
yep.
Yeah. So, but I just think that, you know, everything I've heard, you have to be comfortable with it. And it sounds like the NFL is comfortable with what they've heard and that he's going to be the pick. And, you know, from the on-field standpoint, I don't see why that's an issue.
And then we look at Marcus Mariota at the top of the draft. That's a guy who has, it's kind of the other end of the spectrum where you saw the incredible production. Obviously what they did at Oregon, if you're looking at most NFL teams, doesn't translate to doing the NFL, but then you have so many intangibles, his leadership, his work ethic, the type of young man that he is, to where you say, okay, we haven't seen this yet, but he has the physical tools and he has all the intangibles. So you know that he will develop that. The thing is, Jameis, I think you can put on a field without like entering year one. You can put him on the field, not have to change a whole bunch. You don't have to play around with your offense to make it work. And then at the same time, Mariota either needs to sit and watch or needs to have an offense kind of crafted slowly to get. Look at what RG3's first year, where he's so dynamic. You look at what Cam Newton was to do in his. They had offensive coordinators that sort of built things in for their comfort. But Mariota, it looks like he should be a really great quarterback as long as he. But you're only projecting that not because of what you saw on the field. You're projecting it because of what you know about him, adding to the physical tools and the fact that he was so successful. Because Oregon quarterbacks just don't do well in the NFL.
No, but I think you can, you know, extrapolate a lot of good of what he did as a player on the field. And you know, somebody said it the other day. I think it was Eric Stoner of a lot of places. But right now he's writing for Matt Waldman. And he said, you have to basically throw out like 90% of what Mariota does. And then you have to pull from 10% of what he did. And that's where you're going to find whether or not he can make it as a player. And that's kind of astute in the fact that, yeah, a lot of the stuff he did was, you know, jet sweep, throw it out to the wide receiver. It was, you know, fake handoff or play action and, you know, throw a slant or, you know, one read, either you're throwing the slant or you're going to run or, you know, just a lot of quick decision-making, but there are enough throws over his 3 years at Oregon that you can definitely see everything you need to see. And I think that's what the NFL is going to have to do. And as you said, they're going to have to, as much as people hate this, they're going to have to spend time making him conform as opposed to just letting him play. And that's what a lot of, you know, us within the internet draft arena don't understand is that the NFL is not going to change for a singular player. So, you know, that's why a lot of these guys bust is because they're not able to adapt to the NFL. Right or wrong, that's just how the NFL does it. And, you know, Mariota is going to be an awesome test case because he's really talented. He's got a good arm and he seems like a really, really smart kid. So he's got everything you want in the quarterback position. It's now just a matter of where does he land and can they harness out of him early what they need, so there's not the, because there's going to be growing pains, just not the RG3 type growing pains after his super successful year one.
Yeah, people look back, you look back at the rookie seasons of who are going to be Hall of Famers. You look at Brett Favre, you look at Peyton Manning. They threw interception after interception, but there was enough that you saw of wow. Kind of like Andrew Luck. People You look at his numbers, they're not over eye-popping from his rookie year, but some of the things that you see him do, you're like, ooh. And then you had the turnovers, but the fact that he is able to do that, you kind of see enough. It's kind of what fans tend to get hung up of and what they could be. And I do the same thing, because you see a guy like Ryan Lindley. I was guilty of this. Oh, he looks awful out there his rookie year. And there was one throw that I said, ooh, wow. And they kept talking about what he does in practice. And then when he came back, and we talked about this, and I said, this isn't the same Ryan Lindley as 2012. This is not the rookie one. He's been working the Bruce era. No, it was more or less the same Ryan Lindley, more or less. And so we see enough. You see year one. You kind of know what they're projected towards. If you look at those first 16 games, if they haven't done much, guess what? You're not going to get much after that. You're not going to get much in 90% of the cases.
Right. And you look at like an Andrew Luck in his year one. And part of it was, and we've seen this as Cardinals fans, the reality is that Bruce Arians' offense isn't like super conducive to not throwing interceptions. So, you know, those 18 interceptions were a lot, or, you know, not taking a ton of sacks, where he was sacked 41 times as a rookie. So, I mean, it's just, it's part of the issue that you have with, you know, like we said, fit. How do they fit into what, you know, where they're going to end up? And I think, for Mariota, a fit is going to be a coach that's willing to, you know, adapt his style enough to allow Mariota to be comfortable in year one, and then change and evolve with Mariota as he grows as a player. And as easy as that sounds, talking about it, it's not going to be easy at all. Just because that's just how the NFL works, unfortunately.
This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is Jess Rudin, Seth Cox. We're talking NFL draft in terms of offense on the offensive side of the ball for the Arizona Cardinals as we lead up to the NFL draft at the end of April. You can call in it at 646-478-3787 as we get into the next segment of the show, in which we're going to be talking about the different positions on the offensive side of the ball and kind of talk about how likely is it that the Cardinals go in that direction. If calling in is a make sense, if you're listening via download, we'll make sure that you head over to RevengeOfTheBirds.com, our great Arizona Cardinals site, a great Cardinals community. You can leave your comments and about the show there. And you can also hit us up at Twitter at Revenge of Birds, or also to Seth at XFB, or to my personal Twitter handle at Senor Jessroot, S-E-N-O-R. J-E-S-S-R-O-O-T. So let's talk about the positions on offense and how likely we think it is where the Cardinals are actually taking. Obviously, with eight picks, you can't go with every position. And we've seen in previous drafts where they've doubled down on some drafts. We look at Steve Keim and Bruce Arians' first two drafts. They double dipped in their first draft at running back when they picked up both. Well, they double dipped twice because they got Jonathan Coover or Watford at guard. They got Stephon Taylor and Andre Ellington at running back. And then in year two, they went with John Brown early in round three. And then they went with Walt Powell, guy they ended up cutting and ended up landing with the Jets. They're not afraid to double down on positions. That's not going to really work if you can't draft everyone. And you can't really pick a guy per position. They got eight picks. Let's go through the offense. Start with the quarterback. I'm going to say, even though they brought in Brett Hundley, I think all they did was simply do some homework. I really, really, I would be shocked personally if they draft a quarterback, and I think it would only happen to be if Jameis Winston somehow dropped out of the top 10 and the Cardinals traded up for him. I just don't see them, even with the Brett Hundley visit, I don't see them taking a quarterback this year because they seem pretty committed to seeing how Logan Thomas develops.
Well, and you have to remember with like those player visits, so they get 30, I think it is, player visits, but Hundley falls in the category of where he doesn't count because he's from here, so he's considered a hometown visit. So in all reality, they did it with Taylor Kelly too. I mean, so let's be honest, it's a show of let's, you know, bring in the local kids and keep our ties strong within the community. But I mean, it's really not going to do a ton of stuff. I think you look at the quarterbacks, and like you said, Arians has a mold that he wants. Usually they're 6'4 plus. Drew Stanton's the 1.63 quarterback. So, you know, even a guy like Garrett Grayson, who's 6'2, I don't think he's in that mold. Or, you know, Shane Carden later in the draft. The one guy that might, and I completely stress the might, be interesting is Bryce Petty, and that's depending on how far he falls down. Like, I don't think he's a day one or two or early day three pick, but like if for some reason people are scared off by his back and they see him sitting in round five, you know, that could make sense, but I think he's going to go in the top three rounds, so I don't think it really matters. And then the same vein, you know, they got 2 seventh round picks, so maybe they take a flyer on like a Sean Mannion in the seventh. But yeah, I'm kind of with you. I don't, unless something screwy happens with Jameis, I don't see any way I don't see them drafting a receiver.
Quarterback,
exactly what I mean, as I read my receiver notes.
Well, so I just think that, well, it's the way they have the quarterback situation set up. They know they're starting Carson Palmer this year. They've got Drew Stanton as the backup. That's set in stone, and he's under contract for one more year. Logan Thomas, they're going to let develop. Whether they think he will be the starter after – I don't think they're going to be a starter. I think they're going to look at what he does this offseason and what he does in practice this year as to whether they can trust him to be their number two in 2016. And perhaps, because we don't know how long and basically how the salary cap's looking at, you almost have to roll with Palmer in 2016 as well, because he's $19 million against the cap in 2016 and $13 million dead if he retires or if they cut him or whatever. So it's going to be Palmer in 2016. I think it's a question they look at Logan Thomas this offseason to decide, can we roll with him at number two and let Drew go get a starting job? Because if Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer can sign for money, then Drew Stanton should go get paid somewhere too, because he's every bit as skilled, if not more, than those guys.
Well, and the thing that people have to remember with Logan, and this is for any quarterback picked in round four and on, is that you're drafting them to hope that they develop, but part of that development is, will they be good enough to be a backup? And we've seen in the NFL how important it is to have a competent backup quarterback. People forget, like, you know, they call Byron Leftwich a bust, but he wasn't great because he was picked seventh overall. But if he, you know, if you got his career out of the fourth round, which is where Logan Thomas was drafted, I think everybody's ecstatic with that, because it's a fourth round quarterback, and, you know, he plays in, you know, what, 100 some odd games throughout his 12-year NFL career, and, you know, is able to fill in for your franchise quarterback. And nobody, you know, people don't understand until it's too late, and we saw this last year, how important a competent backup quarterback is. And really, you know, if they get that out of Logan Thomas, then that draft pick was a win in and of itself. It doesn't mean he has to turn into the franchise.
Oh, especially means if he's competent enough to be the backup, you get him on rookie fourth round money for two more years. That's significant, because then you can afford to have pay Carson more, or you can, it opens things up if you have your late round picks develop into something competent and contributing, because it helps your salary cap situation so much. So that, for that reason, I think anyone who mocks a quarterback to the Cardinals, I think, is just being a little short-sighted. Steve Kymus, you know, bringing a quarterback every year, but he's sort of meeting the minimum doing that when, you know, it brings in Chandler Harnish. He technically brought in a quarterback every year. I think they're committed to Logan. I think they saw enough out of Logan in practice to think, hey, we like him. And this offseason is big. I mean, I don't see them throwing away a draft pick. I think there's the possibility of an undrafted guy later on. I really even doubt that. I think if Logan was just awful in this offseason, they would turn back to Ryan Lindley as a number three before they did anything else, before they brought in another quarterback. I would, and even then, they would roll with two quarterbacks on the roster. They're not going to, until they were in a situation where they needed a backup. And then I think they'd bring Ryan Lindley back.
Ew.
Sorry to make you sick there.
No, I just, you know, you want Logan to develop, but I think, like you said, they brought in Chandler Harnish. That's their 2015. We brought in a quarterback. You know, maybe if a guy, like we said, falls that they really like, maybe, but I'm with you. I don't see it.
Let's look at running backs. I think this is all as the way they've talked, the a couple of things, the fact that they signed no running back, the fact that they've talked about the running back, and Steve Kymes talked about it, Bruce Arians has talked about it. I think there is a 100% chance they draft a running back. The question is, how much is Bruce Arians smokescreen? Because he said he wants a big back, and he doesn't want just a big back. He wants a back who's big and fast. Talking about Jonathan Dwyer type of guy they want. And at the same time, you got some of these guys at the top of the draft. He talks, you know, fourth, fifth round. And then you talk about there's 15 good running backs in the draft, and there's a dozen that are worth that'll probably go in the first three rounds. The question is where. But I think there is a 100% chance that they will draft at least one running back this year.
Yeah, and I think when you look at this running back class, you start at the top with Gurley, and he's going to be everybody's number one. And the only reason, like, I wouldn't have him number one, like, when I come out this week, Duke Johnson will be number one, and that's simply just because of health, like Gurley's knee and everything like that. You know, he's a better player than Duke, but you always have to be concerned about that. You know, everybody wants him to be Adrian Peterson coming back, and nobody's willing to, you know, admit that he could be Ryan Williams coming back. And I know there are different knee injuries and whatnot, but it's just the reality of the situation. A running back and a knee are not, you know, best friends to have injured. When you talk about big and fast, you know, unfortunately, in this draft, those don't really go together. You have a guy like Jay Ajayi out of Boise State, who kind of, he ran well, probably not as fast as, you know, everybody would expect with the running backs, but the running backs this year were really living in that like 4.5 to 4.7 range. But there, he runs really big and mean. And so I think that's a guy that could be a fit in on day two. I don't think he'll go day one, but you never know in the NFL with how these guys get graded and whatnot. Another guy that I like, and I've compared him to Rashard Mendenhall as a runner, and we know about Arians' affinity for Mendenhall, was T.J. Yeldon. I think, you know, he's kind of that big guy who moves, you know, it runs well in between the tackles. He's a big guy that doesn't run with as much power behind his pads as you would like, which is where the Mendenhall kind of comes in, because, you know, Mendenhall looked like Tarzan, but he didn't always play like it. So he's a guy. The one guy that I'm interested in, and it's really, I don't know what to make of him, is is Tevin Coleman out of Indiana. He's not big by any means. Like I think he weighed in like 206 or something like that. But he runs like really angry and violent. He's not a back, like he kind of runs like Andre Ellington, where, you know, he's going to be a one cut and kind of go type of guy. I just worry if he can hold up in the NFL, because I mean, he literally runs like he's got to run through a wall every time he touches the ball. And so, like, you know, in the NFL, that's a hard way to live, and that'll definitely get you out of the league fast. But I'm of the belief that
Brandon
you
Jacobs
kind of
comes to mind.
Yeah, and I've heard him compared to like Darren McFadden of Oakland, you know, and McFadden was fantastic for those, you know, 1.5-2 years, and then he just kind of broke down from injury, and he kind of runs the same way as McFadden did. So it's one of those interesting things. Later on in maybe in round three, and definitely on day three, you're going to see guys like David Cobb out of Minnesota, who's kind of a plotter, grind out kind of guy. Like if you need 4 yards, Cobb's going to get you 4 yards, but if you need 6 yards, he's probably going to get you 4 yards. Like he's that type of back. You know, one of the things that we talked about on Draft Savages was that he was he keeps you on schedule all the time, which means, you know, if it's first and 10 and you're going to run that power play that the Cardinals love so much, then it's going to be second and 4, or, you know, second and 6 or second and 5. And then all of a sudden you have your full arsenal of plays to run. So that's something that is really important in the NFL, is, you know, keeping yourself on schedule and making those plays available, you know, throughout the game. One of my favorite guys, and a guy that really shined at the combine with his burst, was Mike Davis. He didn't run like a scorching 40. It was 4.61, but his 10 second split was, I think, the fastest of all of them. And he's the definition of big, but he's small. He's 5'9", but he weighs like 220. So I don't know. I know he had some bad games in 2014, but I've heard and read that he had a lot of injury issues. So those are some interesting guys. I didn't really mention Melvin Gordon or Todd Gurley because everybody knows about them. If you want my opinion on Duke Johnson, I think he's the most electric back in the class. I think he can be a legitimate kind of 1,000 type of threat with his ability. I just don't know if he's going to be able to maintain his health with the way he runs and his style. He's kind of like C.J. Spiller in that sense, that he's really explosive, but he's got to stay healthy, and he's that, you know, for me, that's concerning.
And I'm looking at the combine guys. If I'm going to take Bruce Arians at face value, he wants a big bag. That's been said times. So I'm thinking, I'm not necessarily looking at height so much as I am looking at weight. The one thing about Jonathan Dwyer that was different about it, he was almost 230 pounds, a big, big, big guy. You have guys starting, I'm looking over the 210 mark, because if you want a guy that, you know, 5'9", 205, that's kind of what they already have in Stephon Taylor in terms of size. So I look at the team above. We started up right there. I look at the 215 mark, and you've got Melvin Gordon at the bottom, Thomas Rawls, you've got Gus Johnson. And I know you're looking at the speed. You've got Jay Ajayi, who you mentioned, 221, Gurley at 222. Then you got 226 all the way up to a guy like Carlos, who's big, 6'1", 230. You're getting to Robert Hughes size. In terms of guys like that, David Cobb's another one, 229, T.J. Yeldon, 226. The football factor that is, you know, LSU, you've got Kenny Hilliard. Yeah. The only thing you need to look at, do they have Clemson on here? Because the Cardinals love, nope, no Clemson at the combine for running back. So we can kind of throw that out for now. Let's look at the receivers. The receiver is always a fun position for Bruce Arians, who just seems to be, aside from the quarterback whisper that he is, he's a wide receiver guy. And you wrote about it a year. I've referred to it many times over the last year, the work that you did researching the type of receivers that Arians likes, which is under 6 foot, under even like 5'11 and below, and they're 40 times or in the 4.4s, 4.3s. He doesn't necessarily look for – he like a Hines Ward can do a lot of dirty work, or a Michael Floyd and Larry Fitzgerald who are big and physical, but that's not it. That's not really his big cup of tea, per se. He had a guy like he had Mike Williams or Mike Wallace, that is, in Pittsburgh, which he said in his own words changed the way they did their offense because of his pull away speed. And it wasn't straight line speed, it was coming across the field and then outrunning people. He had them change the way he likes, Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, John Brown, that sort of guy. Do you see the Cardinals even looking at, say, a Jalen Strong in the first round? I don't think there's a chance. We looked at wide receiver. We're going to just go through the positions. And first of all, do you think the Cardinals draft a receiver? How likely? I think it's probably about, knowing Arians, probably a 75% chance that they go for a receiver. And then we'll kind of go into the receiver because we kind of broke the original plan of the show.
I think they would. Because like you said, it's Arians, it's kind of what he likes. I think there's a lot of guys in this draft that kind of fit into what he likes to do within his, you know, wheelhouse. So I think you're going to see that. I think the other question that, you know, everybody doesn't answer, but I guess I'll just ask it anyways and say it again, is remember, like, they still haven't picked up Floyd's option. I don't know when they have to do that by, to be completely honest, but
it's in the first week of May, I believe, is when they have to do that.
Okay. Yeah, so it's getting close. So I think you're going to see a guy. They're going to bring in a guy, and it's just going to matter of who the guy is that they want to bring in. And because I think, like last year, they drafted Ryan Swope in year one, all guys within that, you know, 6 feet and under range and running in the sub 4.4. So I think they're going to continue to do that while they decide how they're going to handle Floyd, and then what they're going to do with Fitz, because, you know, he's only on a 2-year deal. So you can't just wait for those 2 years to be up and be like, all right, now let's address the wide receiver position. Unfortunately, that's not really how the NFL works. And when you do it that way, that's how you end up being the Cardinals of 2011, 2012.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, if we look at terms of players, a guy that's really caught my eye in terms of just looking at the mold and the skill set, and I see Tyler Lockett out of Kansas State because of his route running, because of his speed, the size, and then out on top of that, the fact that he can be an impact returner as well, something that they do need to pick up in the draft.
Yeah, and I think Lockett's a great name to bring up because, like you said, he's kind of the mold that we talked about. He kind of is more like Walt Powell. I almost called him William Powell from last year than John Brown. Like, he's more of a guy that wins within you know, the route tree and things like that, and not just by getting over the top and making plays. So I think that's a great name. The other guy, and I think he's going to go way too early, is Philip Dorsett out of Miami. He's kind of like John Brown in the same way. He's more of a, you know, like a deep threat right now that needs to learn how to do everything else. So those will be, those are definitely two names that right off the top that you can look at and kind of highlight to watch as they, where they fall on day two and lock it, maybe even day three of the draft.
What about a guy like Crowder out of Duke? He's a guy that I looked at. He hits the size, the speed, at least the, I don't know what he ran, but his 40 was a 4.56, so it's not quite the best. I don't know if what he offers in terms of receiving, but I know he also is dynamic in the return game. Where does he fit in terms of what round does he get looked at? Is he a guy the Cardinals could look at? Would he fit?
Yeah, you know, he's interesting because he's got some drop issues that have shown up a lot on tape, and he doesn't play nearly or he doesn't time nearly as fast as he plays, which is always a concern because then you're wondering if he's able to do more, and you know, he's more quick than fast, and at the NFL level, is that going to translate? You know, that's a, he's a guy, like you said, if you were going to go in that direction, for me personally, a guy like Mario Alford out of West Virginia is kind of the same type of player, where really tiny, 5'8", 180 pounds, but he can come in and be your return man right away. Like he's a track star. And then his 40 time wasn't, you know, Arian, pretty much insane. So he's kind of got that short area quickness, and then with that ability to maintain his long speed. So, you know, he's another guy. And then Trey McBride out of William & Mary, another small school guy. He's a 6-footer, so he's gonna be right at the cusp. He definitely doesn't play, like, he's kind of more in the Jamison Crowder, like, doesn't play as fast as you think. So I'm interested to see where he goes, but I think for the Cardinals, you kind of hit the nail on the head with Lockett to start off, and then I think from there you might see Mario Alford, maybe a Philip Dorsett. I just think Dorsett's going to be too rich for the Cardinals. Like, I don't know. How would you feel if they drafted a wide receiver in the third round again?
It wouldn't surprise me at all. For me, it depends on where they go, where they go in the first couple of rounds. If they already addressed some, and this is, and here we're going to talk about best player available. I don't know what their best, I don't know what their grades look like, so I can't look at who I think is the best player available. I don't know how they grade them. It wouldn't surprise me because they do like to keep their, go stay true to their draft board. And if the guy that they have a particular round grade on and he falls to them at their position, I could see it. I could really see it. And they really, even though everything about this offseason seems to be about building up the running game, that doesn't mean they wouldn't want to put another, especially if it's a guy who, to me, especially if he's a plus returner, because they don't have that on the team right now, from what we can tell. Sure, he can say, you know, he can say that, what's his name? Jeez, I can't even, he could say, who do you say? I don't even remember. I can't even think who he said for the return now. I just wrote about it. For punt and for kicks is Kerwin Williams. That's what, Kerwin Williams on one and some other guy on the other. I think it'd have to be, they could go that route if he's a guy that they can see making an impact in the return game immediately.
Yeah, and I could see that. And that's why I think That's why I think those guys that we talked about earlier, JJ Nelson's one guy we didn't talk about, but I mean, he literally weighs 150 pounds. So
I was going to bring him up like, no, they can't draft a kid that weighed his, you know, that's looks like he's a sophomore in high school. Come on.
Yeah. I just don't, I mean, but here's the thing, like he's legit one of the most dangerous return men in the draft, but you almost wonder if like
he'll ever get killed. Tackled, he'll break.
Yeah, and so I definitely think like Lockett and Alford and you know those guys, maybe a McBride. I just Dorsett is the name that keeps like popping up, but I just think it's going to be too rich. Like, I think some team's going to take him in that Marquise Goodwin, John Brown range. And I, you know, just me personally, I'd prefer to see them wait until day three to pick up a wide receiver. But, you know, I mean, if they pick up an extra third-round pick like they did last year, I think that's what you do with those picks is you stack talent as opposed to maybe – drafting more for need, which they have done in the past. Hate to break it to people.
but they're drafting according to it goes into both ways. Anyway, receivers. Talked about receiver. Let's look at offensive line. This is an interesting position because of just the way the roster is set up right now. You know, they're not going to keep really much more. They might maybe keep 9 guys. So if we're looking at, in terms of health, the state keeping everyone healthy, so you've got Veldy, you've got Upati, you've got Shipley slash Largeson at center, you've got Cooper, you've got Massey. Then you've got, assuming one of the, so you, if Larson doesn't win the starting job, he's the backup swing center guard. Then you've got, Shipley and Larson are the same guys pretty much. But then you've got, you know, Bradley Sowell, who's your they love him. They brought him back. They brought him back on the cheap. And then you've got Earl Watford. It's a really important year. And then you've got a younger, intriguing guy named Anthony Steen. As it is, one of those guys isn't going to be on the roster, guaranteed. I mean, because they're not going to keep all of those guys. So one is already on the way out, maybe more. I don't know if that because they went center early and because they went center already, I don't know if they're going to go center. I mean, you'd think they might. I don't know if they go interior line. I think we brought it up before. If they're draft someone, I think they're looking at a guy that can bounce between guard and tackle, probably going towards a potential right tackle to ensure themselves in the case, say, Massey's going to price himself out or he gets hurt. That way they have someone to play right tackle moving forward. That and then because they have so many interior guys, whether they're great or not. I mean, I think in that situation, it's already better than it was before because they're going from Fanica Larson to now Upati plus, hey, Cooper or Larson or Steen or Watford, and that's already better than any option that they had a year ago. So I think the only thing way I see them taking alignment is if it's a right tackle-ish kind of player.
Yeah, I think the first name that comes to mind, even, you know, you as you describe it, is Cameron Irving. I know his experience at tackle wasn't the greatest, but you have to remember last year he was, you know, before he decided to go back to Florida State, he was talked about as a first round tackle. So maybe he's a guy that you bring in that can compete at tackle and center. That's a really weird combination to talk about because usually when you talk about center, you talk about center guard. But I mean, Irving has that ability. So I mean, maybe that at 24 is an option, but you make the point, you know, and the accurate point that they've invested a lot within the interior of the offensive line when you just in terms of capital. I mean, you look at it, you have Upati, you have Larson, Shipley, Watford, and Cooper. So that doesn't even count Steen, who they allegedly really like. So you're talking, what, five guys for three positions? You know, can they bring in somebody else? Absolutely. Will they? Maybe. If they were going to do something, the two guys, and I'll go over more, but the two guys that kind of make sense if they were going to pull the trigger on day one, which I don't think they will, but you know, you never know. Maybe they aren't as happy with Massey as they have led everybody to believe, and that, you know, they pick a right tackle. You know, it's Kime and Arians. They lie about everything, so you know, you never know. But
exactly,
I think Jake Fisher out of Oregon is a really interesting guy because he's basically played all five positions except for maybe center for Oregon. So he's a really athletic player. You want to talk about length and strength and speed, and he's kind of all of those things. So he's a guy. TJ Clemmings is a guy I like a lot in terms of ability to maybe play right guard or right tackle right away and come in and compete. So those are interesting guys. On day two, you have Tyson Brelo out of Colorado State. He's more of a who's the guy I'm trying to think of off the top of my head? I think that when you look at it's just an interesting grouping because you have a guy like Sombrelo who is a left tackle and then he tested like a guard, but he plays like a right tackle, which makes him, you know, for evaluators, like all screwed up and hard to kind of track in that term. So, I think he's a guy that could come in and kind of play behind a lot of people, for a year and then step in at, you know, right tackle or right guard or wherever the need may show itself to be, which is kind of what, you know, the Cardinals are building towards right now. Everybody is looking at impact, but I think people are forgetting that, you know, they've got a lot of talent. You know, they don't have a need like they usually do at every position. And so, and they pick really late in the draft. So it's not like they're going to be able to just be like, oh, hey, let's draft, you know, the edge rusher we need at 24, because it's just that simple. So Sombrelo's a guy that I like. Another guy that's local, and he's going to, I don't know, I can't get a beat on him in terms of what the NFL thinks, but a lot of people I respect think that Jamil Douglas is going to go like late third, early fourth. I don't see that. I see him as like as a round five developmental guy. So that'll be one to watch because Douglas, as ASU fans know, you've seen him. He can be lights out because of how athletic he is, but he looks completely lost at times on the field. And so I think he's a guy that you have to look at on day, you know, on day three, if he's there, that can come in and do the same thing as Sombrelo and, you know, maybe be a guard or maybe be a tackle or maybe just be a backup for his career. And you're happy with the pick if you're in the right spot. Kyle Collin, I don't think he's going to be there. You know, Cedric Igbuoi, he struggled so much at left tackle this year that now people are wondering if right tackle only. DJ Humphreys is a guy that I haven't got to watch a ton of yet, so I'm not really comfortable being like, oh yeah, Humphreys can do this or this and be good at it. He's another interesting one, though, to watch. Those are the top guys. Now, the list, I mean, really a bigger poison of what you like. The one guy I haven't mentioned was Andres Pete, and that's just because I haven't impressed when I watch Pete. So, hi, Andres, if you're listening, because I know you favor every negative that everybody says about you on Twitter. So, but I haven't been like super happy with him. I think he's a really powerful player, and if they brought him in to play right tackle, I think he would be really, really good. I think he's like Bobby Massey right now. So I think his ability to be more than Bobby Massey is good. But I don't know if, you know, at 24, that's where you want to go.
Right. Now, let's look at the tight end position. First, do you think the Cardinals go that route? I don't know if the tight end position isn't a great class. In fact, the way I kind of heard it described was that if Troy Nicholas had been drafted, had come out in this draft, that he would have been the top tight end out of this class. And as much potential as he has, I don't know what that translates to. The Cardinals have a crop of really big, tall tight ends. And the one thing that Aaron's mentioned was kind of like your fullback, H-back kind of player who can play at all. And when they looked at James Casey, I pulled him up. He's not quite as big, 6'2", 6'3". Now, the local guy they brought in was Demaryius Nelson. I don't know if he translates to the pros, but he does have – he's real athletic, and he's not as big. He's 6'2", 240, I think. He can play a lot of positions. I don't know if they'd be – I don't think it'd be a player that anyone would draft. So are there any type of versatile, little bit smaller guys that could move around more rather than the traditional Arians tight end, but more of a versatile guy that can move all over?
Nick O'Leary is an interesting guy that everybody would know. I mean, he's 6'3". I mean, he's 250, so he's a big guy, but he's lined up in the backfield a lot at Florida State. So he's kind of played in that role before. I don't know. I'm trying to think. He's a guy that if you get him like early day three, I think you pull the trigger, but I don't know if I think he could go sooner than that. So I'm not sure if you want to do more than that, but he's probably the top like H back in the class. Clive Walford is another guy that a lot of people like, much more athletic than Nick O'Leary. My concern with Walford is simply he's a big play guy that doesn't make enough big plays, you know? So that was one of my issues. I don't know if he can play the H-back role. He's a really good blocker. I'll say that part, you know, and it just makes it hard to see if he fits in. He's kind of closer to O'Leary than he is, or sorry, Carlson as an athlete, but then he plays more like Nicholas right now. So I don't know if they want another guy like that. And then the top guy, Max Williams, he's kind of like Heath Miller. So I wouldn't be shocked, you know, if the Cardinals are interested in him. But as you said, they kind of have that. I think with an H-back, you're really looking at O'Leary, and then it kind of falls from there. You know, maybe the one guy that I've watched is Wes Saxton out of South Alabama. And the only reason I've watched him is because I watched Brandon Bridge. So he's kind of a move guy. He'll be a day three pick that has really good athletic traits. So it'll depend on what, you know, teams think of him. I'm trying to think of any other H-backs. Sorry, I had to pull up a list because when you describe it as, you know, H-backs, like you said, all of a sudden a lot of names fall off the board because they're not as – there are a lot of traditional tight ends this year, which is interesting because, you know, the Cardinals drafted a traditional tight end last year, and Darren Fells really came on as a traditional tight end. So, you know, if they get that third tight end, maybe – I could see – O'Leary's really the only name. Like, Jeff Huerman is a really good player, but he's kind of in the Nicholas mold. Trying to think of anybody else. Ben Koyak, another Notre Dame tight end. If you need three of those on your roster, is another guy that does a lot of good stuff. Because he's a really good run blocker. So it's an interesting yet underwhelming class, if you will.
Well, it sounds like I would hope they wouldn't force a pick, because the sort of skill set lends itself to be, you know, your Jim Dre type player, the guy that's not really great at anything but can do a few things. an undrafted player, or heck, you know, if we're looking at a guy like Demaryius Nelson, where he can run the ball, he can block, he can do a little bit, but, and he's just not big enough to be the traditional tight end. I could see them going more of an undrafted route, which seems to be kind of the route they're going with their tight ends. Or aside from Nicholas, they got Carlson. They're going with, let's see who can develop into something.
Yeah, and this is a big year for the Titans, because we've said for, like, what, 4 years straight, like, oh, look, the tight ends are going to be a weapon this year. And now it's like they've invested a lot. They developed Fells, and he came on at the end of the year. They spent pretty good money on Carlson, and then they invested a second-round pick on Troy Nicholas. So they have a lot of capital in that position. So now it's time for one of them, you know, or hopefully two of them, to show up as that, you know, guy that they need, because you'd hate to see them have to spend another pick on a tight end. Cause as important and versatile as tight ends can be, you'd prefer to have a different guy, right? I mean, you'd prefer to invest in like a defensive back or something like that, as opposed to another tight end when you have three that you would think can play.
Especially when you've still got issues at when you're talking about depth at inside linebacker, you've got the need at tight end, and then you've got the future of the cornerback position, and then at the defensive back in general. So yeah, we sort of reached, and so that kind of brings it to the end of the offense. We'll talk defense in a couple of weeks. We've talked about the top players of the draft. We talked about the positions of need. We've kind of gone through, and we've gone through some potential targets that the Cardinals might look at and who fits for the Cardinals offensively. But now we've reached the end of the show, where we say, hey, thanks for listening to the last hour and 15 minutes almost. It's much appreciated. Those who have made it to the end, you guys are awesome. You guys are dedicated Cardinals fans, and we salute you. And if you're not already a member of Revenge of the Birds, you are missing out. So head on over to revengeofthebirds.com, the great SB Nation site for the Arizona Cardinals community. Great stuff there. Great community, and a growing community at that. Big thanks to Seth Cox, who joins us as always. As you got to hear, it was much more Seth than it was just tonight. And again, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Whether it's Tuesday or Wednesday, we'll work that out. So 2 weeks from tonight, we will be back, and we will talk on the defensive side of the ball. Anything left to tell our faithful listening audience, if there is anybody left out there, Seth?
No, I appreciate you guys listening. And if you have any questions, feel free to tweet at me, or you can get at me, Jess, or anything. And I'm always open to talking about the draft with anybody, so feel free to get at me and ask questions. I'll try to be a little more active on Twitter as we get closer, and as I start finalizing some of my grades and stuff. So I'm always happy to interact with you guys.
All right, well, thanks, Seth. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Drew. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio. We will talk to you again in 2 weeks. Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.